time for the Extra Innings Podcast, presented by the Seattle Times. Your host is Seattle Mariners beat writer Ryan Divish. This semi-weekly slash monthly slash whenever he gets around to it podcast talks about the Mariners, Major League Baseball, food, and whatever else Ryan and his guests decide to talk about. And now, here's your host, Ryan Divish.
All right, happy opening day. It's the 2020 season begins for the Seattle Mariners tonight. Yes, it's Friday morning. I'm recording this podcast day of. I know that technically the truncated and shortened 2020 MLB season had its reopening day on Thursday night with the Yankees and the Nationals. I think Giancarlo Stanton's home run off of Max Scherzer is still traveling as we speak. And then they had Dodgers, Giants afterwards. But for me, you know, obviously covering the Mariners today is my opening day. It's a little weird. I am not in Houston. We are not traveling with the team as of now. I asked to go to Houston because I felt like it was important to be there to write about the aesthetic or just the feeling in the park of an empty stadium. But given that Houston is a hot spot, and I mean, it's a super duper hot spot right now with COVID-19, my bosses felt like, from a safety standpoint, they didn't want me to go. And so I can't really argue with them on that. I mean, I pushed back because that's what I always do and tried to get them to let me go and even offered to sign a waiver and other things. But, you know, there is safety issues and I respect that. So I will not be in Houston for these games. I don't think any of the Mariners local media is traveling. I saw that some of my friends from New York were traveling last night. We're in D.C. It's also a little different, you know, talking to some of the other writers, you know, on the East Coast or even in the Central Division where you can drive to games, news outlets are a little bit more willing to send you. It's when you have to fly, and I guess 4.5 hours in a plane is something that, you know, people would like to avoid. So I am not going to be in Houston. I'll be having to cover it off of TV. I think our paper is writing something explaining it, but who knows. Anyway, so that stinks. I mean, I'd like to be there. I wanted to see what it would be like in the stadium. You know, I've been in the stadium for these inter-squad games in Seattle, but it's different. I mean, this is a regular season game, and I would have liked to have been in there. But again, like I said, I understand their concerns. So, you know, I'm not going to go off about that. We have recorded a podcast. I mean, I just did one last week, but, you know, given that the nature of today, felt like we should have a podcast. So I did it actually yesterday afternoon. I had a conversation with Larry Stone about the upcoming season for the Mariners. And we just kind of went into all the things we saw from summer camp, which I hope we never have to go through again, and we can just have normal baseball. And then, you know, the roster that they selected for the 2020 season, the injury to Tom Murphy that kind of popped up yesterday, some of the other decisions they made with the roster, like, you know, not having only two true outfielders there and not putting Jake Fraley or Braden Bishop on the team. And then we just kind of get into our predictions for the season, what we expect and everything like that. Also, like our season preview stuff came out yesterday and today, and it's not the special section we normally do. It's a lot of the same content we would put in the special section. We just didn't have the special section, so we ran it over the last couple of days. So if you get a chance, jump on the Seattle Times website and read it. But, you know, I've talked long enough here. Let's get to Larry and start talking about opening day and the upcoming season for the Seattle Mariners. All right, that is Larry Stone joining us. Say something, Larry, so the camera goes to you.
Hey, people, how you doing?
Larry, happy opening day. Did you ever think we were going to get here?
Yeah, here we are, July 23rd, and it's happy opening day. Who would believe it? You know, I still want to see it happen. Today, Juan Soto of the Nationals tested positive, one of the bright young players in baseball. You know, just a reminder of the challenges that we face on this, but it looks like they're going to play. And, it's hard to believe that what would be about 4 months into the season, we're finally starting it, but it should be exciting, if nothing else.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I don't have to cover tonight. I'm still finishing up my roster story for today because I was out kind of doing stuff before when the rosters came out. So I'm trying to write an analysis piece on that. But go over to my buddy Brian's and sit in his garage or in his yard and watch games and just maybe have a beer and look at baseball. I watched a little bit of some of the exhibition games that they had on, which is, they were weird, no fans, everything like that. But, you know, it's something. I mean, Garrett Cole versus Max Scherzer, that's not terrible, is it?
No, it's a great matchup. And, I think we're going to be sort of accustomed to the no fans thing before too long. We've seen all those inter-squad games,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we've watched, you know, soccer and the other sports. I think it's just
you've watched soccer.
I know you. Yeah, you're.
You watch soccer. I'm not a secret soccer fan.
You have the scarf on and everything, mm-hmm. scarves up, and so I think that's just the way it is in 2020. I think we'll get used to that pretty quick. It will be weird. I do like this. I think they've sort of perfected the crowd noise. I like it with buzz. I like the buzzed in noise more than I like silence. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
I like the silence because you can hear the players talking, which I think is kind of cool. But I do kind of like the crowd noise a little bit just because there is that din in the stadium and it is really weird. So I got so used to having the crowd noise pumped in at those inter-squad games at Safeco that when it would stop, it seemed so eerily quiet, you know, and you could really hear everything, which I thought was kind of cool because you could hear them talking trash to each other, you know, them talking on the field. Because, you know, the assumption is that, like, you know, pro guys, you know, there's no chatter in the dugout. They don't say anything, but there's silence out there, but they really aren't. They're talking. We just can't hear it. You know, you can't hear it on the TV mics and everything like that very often. And so that I found that kind of cool and refreshing, but you know, I understand that, like, you have to provide some ambiance and I'm also worried, you know, I'm sure that MLB is probably worried a little bit about what is picked up on the field. Like, even we were talking to Taiwan Walker and he said that, you know, he's got to make sure that he watches what he says because sometimes he'll have the tendency to drop an F-bomb or two when he throws a bad pitch. And we've all been there. I mean, I do it at least 12 times a game in the press box. But yeah, so he was pretty cognizant of that, but it'll be weird, I think, you know, and just all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, how much did you watch of the inner squad, like on YouTube, or did you watch any of those exhibition games or anything like that?
I watched a couple of them. You know, you got to watch it. They might pick up your F-bomb since you're in the press box, you know, in an empty stadium and you're calling the desk, you know, you might.
Oh boy. Yeah. That could be a problem. I had a tantrum the other day about something and I started banging on the counter and scared the hell out of the three Japanese media members. They didn't go running like they did in the Arizona press or the Arizona media room. I don't know if you were there that day when I whipped the water bottle against the wall and started beating the table and they were
in training. You mean, or
in spring training? I think it was last year. I started banging the thing like this with my hand, and then I grabbed a water bottle and whipped it against the wall, and the Japanese media just scattered. I was like, come on, man, I'm one of you guys. You don't have to be afraid of me. And they're like, oh, yeah, you're crazy. So,
one of our colleagues once threw a chair at Kingdom, I guess it was, and it went rattling around and down a stairway. It was a memorable occasion.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't watch too many of those intra-squad games all the way through, but my son showed me how to project it on our TV, so I did watch I watched a few, but it won't be the same as – I mean, I'm looking forward to watching real baseball against other teams and you know. I just think there is something to be said for picking up people talking and all that. But to me, it just feels more natural and more like a game when you hear the buzz of the crowd and then the roars when there's good things happening. And I think they've started to perfect kind of how to do that. They have crowd noises for every occasion. Okay, this is for a base hit, this is for a home run or whatever. And they're kind of putting it in fairly seamlessly. So, I mean, you know, in your mind that it's all fake, but the trickery kind of works for a while. We'll see how it holds up.
Well, we'll be able to see, and we'll be able to hear their walk-up music, and then I can complain about Kyle Seager's pop country walk-up music, or, man, they had a lot of Christian music in the last few days. I don't know if that's what they're sticking with, but there seemed to be a lot of Christian music. You know, my favorite was Cal Raleigh, who had Hippies and Cowboys by Cody Jinks. That was a pretty good one. That was one of the better ones that I heard. The rest of them, you know. But it was no Johnny Cash from Merle Haggard for you. Sorry, Larry.
You're far more aware of that than I am. To me, you know, I could watch a whole game and barely – the walk-up music will barely even register, whereas you're, like, intently focused on that. But that's one of the many differences between you and me.
I know, besides height and looks and, you know, all of these
talent.
Larry, did you honestly think we'd get here? I mean, Scott Servais last night post-game kind of said, he goes, you know, I didn't think we'd get here. He goes, honestly, I had concerns of whether we would ever make it to this point, to opening day or not, just because of the testing and all that other stuff, and just the possibility of something to go wrong. And he credited his players, and I think you got to credit basically all the players in Major League Baseball for the most part, and the staffs and the people manning it. I won't necessarily credit Major League Baseball's governing body because they managed to mess up the testing process early. But I do think that from what I can tell, players and coaches and everybody involved at the basic level, the ones that are down there in the middle of it, took it very, very seriously.
Yeah, I can't say I'm totally surprised. I will be surprised if they make it all the way through. I mean, I just felt that there were lots of danger points, and they've made it through, to their credit. They've made it through one, which was this long camp, 3 weeks. But there's still 2 months to go of now we're traveling. Now, I mean, they're traveling, which adds a whole nother element. You've got planes and hotels and that sort of thing. So, you know, they're not out of the woods yet, but it's a good sign. I mean, I'm rooting for him to make it. It would be great if they showed in the other sports show that we could pull this off. I think it would be naive to think that they're home free now. But as you said, they are taking it seriously. And I think all of the teams are, but all it takes is a couple of slip-ups and things could go awry. So, still got to be vigilant here.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, like, maybe where Juan Soto got contracted, you know, his case from, or Hunter Dozier, and see, you know, if they got it because they left, you know, they went somewhere, or maybe it's their girlfriend or their wives or something like that, or somebody else that they came in contact to. I always felt like, well, I felt like most, you know, 85% of the players, 85 to 90% of the players would take it pretty seriously, because they want to get paid and all the other stuff. You just didn't know what the people attached to them, whether it's a wife, a girlfriend, family, you know, you just don't know whether they're going to take it as seriously as the players do. Because, you know, again, like when you're a player, you know, when you're at home, you go to the park, you're there, you do all your workout stuff. You're there for 4 hours or whatever, play your game or your workouts and everything like that. Then you go home. And a lot of times most players just go home anyways. But it's the families that don't have anything to do that are just hanging out throughout the day waiting for the player to come home, and that could be an issue. So, you know, and I mean, really, you run the risk of just going to Target or Walmart or the gas station or anywhere. I mean, you leave your house, you run the risk of getting infected. So we'll see. The travel part is interesting. Like, you're talking about airplanes and buses and everything like that. You know, I know it's a charter situation. They're not flying commercial, but I mean, you just don't know. There's so many other extraneous people that will come in contact some way with these players and coaches that it could happen. And I think, you know, they have the protocols in place, so we'll see. What would be interesting is if, like, 4 or 5 guys on the same team all got it at once. Do they make a concession, or they just say, tough, you know, you guys all got it, you have to do it that way.
Well, I mean, you just saw that in the MLS with the Dallas team, which had 7 or 8 guys, and they ended up getting kicked out of that tournament. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, if one team is affected, there's a trickle down effect because they have opponents, and if a team is shut down for 2 weeks or something because there's this massive outbreak, it messes up the whole schedule and standings and all that. So, that's why it's so important not to have that happen.
Yeah, I'd be curious too. Like if, say, like 6 or 7 guys on one team got it, well, ostensibly you have, your 60-man player pool to bring in fill-ins, but would MLB give that team like 40-man roster relief in terms of you got to put these guys on the 40-man roster and then you're going to have to remove them. You can only have 40 at the same time. I mean, like, how would that work? Because if you take guys off the 40-man to get those guys that have COVID back, well, you have to outright them or put them on waivers. So I don't know how that's going to work, but it is, I'll be interested to see. Like, we won't – I think a week in, it'll be fine. I think it's 2 weeks in. 2 weeks in after every team has done a road trip, what do we know from there? And that's when we'll have a better idea.
Well, and then I find it curious that MLB was, when they were doing the negotiations, they were staunch in that the season couldn't be any longer than 60 games because they had to start the postseason by September 27th because they had to get it contained into October. And now, just hours before the first pitch, it looks like they're agreeing to a new expanded playoff format that's going to, I haven't seen any dates, but it's adding another round to the playoffs. So it's certainly going to drive the season longer. I just wish they had used, if they were going to expand the season, I wish they had expanded the regular season and not the postseason. And instead of having 60 game season, have it longer. But I know it's all about the television money and the playoff money that will now be split. The extra money be split among the players and the owners, and that's important for them in a season when the revenue has been slashed. But talking about what we were talking about, the danger points, you're adding more games at a time when there's a fear of a second wave in October, November. So that just adds another layer of danger to this thing.
I said it before, but I don't know if you can have a second wave if you're still stuck in the first wave.
Yeah.
Honestly, if you're still drowning in the first wave, is there really a second wave? I guess it comes down on top of your head and pushes you down more. But
right.
Let's just get to the playoffs. So when they did the original, well, it wasn't really an agreement. They agreed upon the operating manual because they didn't really come to a CBA agreement or agreement between the players and the owners. Rob Manfred stepped in and set the schedule. But when they did that, there was always that position that they could expand the playoffs. I was always kind of in there that, look, we can look at expanding the playoffs. And I think that's part of the reason why they only wanted the 60 games is because they really wanted to expand the playoffs. One, because they just had that agreement with TBS. I think it was for billions of dollars on playoff coverage. And so the league knew that, adding that extra round of playoffs is going to get more TV revenue dollars in, and that's going to help them. And I think, I think, again, they're looking around too and saying, look, we're probably not going to make a ton of money on here. This is a way we can actually make offset some of the losses that we're expecting to accrue. It does change the nature of it. And also, so think about this. So what is it going to be now? Is it expanded to 16 teams, right? Eight per division? Or eight per league.
And according to Buster Olney, the way they're going to do it is it's not just the three division champions and then the five with the next best record. It's the three division champions and the three second place teams in each division, regardless of record, and then the two teams with the next best record, which last year under this format, the 78 and 84 Texas Rangers would have made the playoffs 6 games under .500 as the sixth best team the eighth best team, rather, in the American League. So, over 50% of the teams are going to make the postseason, which I don't like. I mean, baseball has always been special to me in that it's the hardest postseason to get into. And now it's, you know, it's pretty close to the easiest still this year anyway, with 50%+.
So if you're the Mariners and you go, I don't know, 16-10 to start the season.
Yeah.
Or 18, you know, if you play better than you think.
13-2, something like that, something yeah, random.
Let's be realistic. They're playing Houston to start with. So, but like, no, like say they went 16, say they're 6 or 7 games above 500, halfway in. What if you're, what, say you're.
What's at 500? Yeah. What's at 500? A 500 team's going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, do you change then? Do you bring Kelnick in if you think he's going to help you? You know, like, I mean, you know, would you do that? Do you look at Logan Gilbert? Yeah, do you make a trade? I mean, they want to trade guys anyways, but still.
You know, if they hold Kelnick down for 6 games, they could then he doesn't lose. He would only lose 1 year of free agency potentially if he plays all of next year. So, I mean, there is a way they could still limit the damage of, you know, of burning up a year of free agency. But it's still, to me, I think they should think hard before they do that. And, you know, if they have this plan for him to get those extra 2 years that we talked about last week, then, you know, I don't know if you give that up just to be the second wildcard team. In or the 8th wild card team in a screwy season.
Yeah, and then with the Well, and another thing is like, look, he was great in the first few inter-squad games. He hadn't done a whole lot lately, and he's looked a little overwhelmed at times. You know, they really, I think the pitchers got tired of hearing about him and hearing from him, and they really went after him and they attacked him, and he has, you know, he looked a little bit like a 20-year-old with no major league experience facing some big league pitchers that can execute a little bit. You know, I still think he's going to be a good player, but the argument is too, is like, how really ready is he to come in and be a contributor? Is that worth burning a whole year of free agency for the hope that he might help you, you know, or, you know, does somebody else, you know, have a better chance of helping you?
Yeah, I felt all along we kind of overreacted to 2 homers in an early inter-squad game. And, I overreacted as much as anybody, so I'm guilty too. But you're right, he has not looked the same, and that's – there's going to be a learning curve for him, and I'm not sure that this is the year you want to start that.
Yeah, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. Again, I, you know, maybe it's different. Maybe he's a finishing piece or something, but you could just as easily pick up a trade piece that, you know, would be more of a predictable finishing piece if you were at 500 or a few games over 500 at the halfway point. Everything I've seen from their bullpen and their offense tells me that that will not be a problem 30 games into the season.
The thing is, With 60 games, you know, and 8 playoff teams per league, everybody, just about everybody is going to think they're borderline contenders. That's the, I mean, that's what's going to make it interesting anyway, except for the Baltimore Orioles, which might be the worst team I've seen in years. But everybody else, the Orioles are going with Wade LeBlanc and Tommy Malone is
as they're 1-3.
1-3, yeah. So
they weren't even the 1-3 on the Rainiers.
Yeah, even at least the Tigers have some young talent. It doesn't seem like the Orioles have anything. But
why it's, I guess in that way. Although I don't know. I mean, tanking. Other, you know, the Mariners aren't really trying to win the postseason, either the Orioles, the Tigers, Royals, Marlins, like, are perpetually like that. But the rest of the teams, I don't think – I guess the Giants a little bit, but the Giants have some pieces. They're just in a really tough division. But, yeah, there is not – I guess by having that many teams possibly get into the postseason, that maybe you don't have as many teams wanting to tank.
Well, what's it, you know, I wrote about this in the column that's going to be in tomorrow's paper, but, you know, 60 games, even bad teams have 60 game stretches where they're good. Like 2 years ago, the Mariners lost 86 games and finished fourth, I think. But there was one 60 game stretch where they played 567 ball. And the wild card, that was better than each wild card team that year. The Yankees and can't remember who the other wild card team was, but they were both below 560. So this was a bad team that for 60 games played at a playoff pace. So you just don't know. There's going to be some of those. There's going to be good teams which just have a bad stretch, which over 162 game season, just like the Nationals last year, where after 60 games they were well under 500 and they won the World Series. So you're going to have good teams that may struggle over 60 games, and you have bad teams that may just be good. And so it's really a crapshoot, and the champion may not necessarily be the best team. A lot of cases it's going to be the team that stays the healthiest and can avoid COVID. Juan Soto, who's probably the best player on the Nationals right now, is out.
Yeah, 2 weeks at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. So if you're thinking about that, like, you have a horrible stretch, it could derail you. Look at, like, if you're the Twins and you were pointing towards this season as your season to really go, and, like, you know, Cruz does get nicked up or Josh Donaldson gets hurt, because he does. I mean, all of a sudden you have a bad stretch and you're trying to play. I mean, their division is so god-awful, though. I mean, they're going to finish. They should finish top two in that division. I just don't see how they could. Well,
Cleveland's good, but no one else. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the White Sox are supposed.
White Sox are on the rise. White Sox, yeah, they're a dark horse team. They've got they're sort of did what the Mariners did, and they think they're going to come out the other side. They've got that Luis Robert.
Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, and
yeah, and you know, Abreu, who led the league in RBIs last year.
Yeah.
And they picked up Dallas Keuchel, I think.
So what if the Mariners were to make the postseason, does it really end their drought?
You know, I was discussing that with my son and daughter last night. Yeah, it does. But, you know, it's also possible that they don't even get a home game. The first round is going to be played. Three games, but it's all at the site of the team with the best record. Because they want to minimize the travel.
It doesn't matter anyways. No fans could go anyway. So
that's right. That's a good point.
That would be pretty off. That would I know we joked about it before, but a year when you couldn't have fans is the year that the Mariners actually made the postseason. But
yeah, but you know, it would end the drought. Technically, it would. You know, you could put your own personal asterisk on it, and as such. But at least we would have to stop writing. It's been 19 years since they made the postseason. Would say it's been 19 years since they made the postseason in a 162 game season.
I mean, like, I'd stop writing the longest drought in North American professional sports.
The other interesting aspect of this new format is that the highest rating teams get to choose their opponent. So there's going to be a selection show to do that, which, I mean, that is an intriguing element, because the team you pick is going to be pissed off. Oh, you think we're beatable, you know?
If you're the Yankees and say you have the choice, and you have the Twins, who have a better record than, say, the Rays. But
the Yankees own the Twins.
Yes. So do you choose the Twins? Because there's like that whole mental block that the Twins have with the Yankees. Do you do that?
That's kind of what made that's the intriguing element of this that I kind of like. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of aspects that would go into this. The pitching, you know, if there's one nemesis of your team, you might want to avoid that team, even though they're not necessarily as good a team.
I mean, definitely, like, you know, if you're – Say the Nationals, they don't win the division or whatever, but you have – I mean, there is no way in hell you pick the Nationals that you want to face them, because they got Strasburg and Scherzer. I mean, like, you're playing a three-game series against them. That's not ideal.
No.
And Corbin. I mean, like, that just doesn't work. That's how they won it last year, is because of those guys.
I think I'd rather be a team that, except for the, you know, in this year where home field advantage doesn't really matter that much, be a team that let someone choose you rather than having the decision of who to choose.
Well, I mean, I still think there will be a home field advantage in just simply how the park plays. Like, you know, like the Astros get such an advantage of playing in their park just because the way it plays that, you know, and they set their team up for that. So, I mean, I do think that there is an advantage there. I haven't – is it finalized? I haven't looked at Twitter in the last few minutes.
I think it's all finalized except for the owners have to approve it. The union signed off on it. The owners are going to have a vote on it. I mean, when's the first pitch at this Nationals game?
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm sure they're just doing it now, and we're going to get a release before. And they, you know, maybe that's what they're going to do is they'll put Manfred on that Nationals-Yankees broadcast and say, hey, look, this is what we're going to do. And, you know, Manfred can sell it like the used car salesman that he is. So
It just seems preposterous to me that you do this literally minutes or hours before – a couple hours before the season starts. You know, I mean, would teams have formulated their rosters differently if they knew?
Again, that's something that you had to take into account. Like, you know, there were some free agents on the market that like, hey, you know, if you're one piece away, and you know, honestly, if you're the Mariners and you're trying to move Kyle Seager and D Gordon and even Malik Smith or somebody like that, this helps you a ton.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, again, like, you don't think with you know, the Mariners don't really have any outfielders. They have two outfielders on the roster, which we'll get to in a second. But, I mean, like, you know, if the Braves, you know, and the Braves and the Nationals had needs at third base, and all of a sudden you're the Nationals, you're going to be without Soto for 2 weeks, could be longer. All of a sudden, if you're Jerry DePoto, aren't you calling up Mike Rizzo and say, well, you know, I don't have an outfielder for you, but I got a left-handed hitting third baseman that could really help you, and you don't really have a third baseman, you're going to play Carter Kieboom there. I mean, like, maybe you want to take a look at this. Or similar to the Braves, who are going to go in with the third baseman, unknown third baseman, you know, and, you know, the Braves tried to get Puig because they wanted some extra offense. Well, maybe that helps you trade these guys because, again, too, you're not paying very much money in terms of salary allocation because you're paying one-third or not even one, you know, one-third of the salary owed this year.
Yeah. I just wonder what the return would be, because normally if you trade a guy at the July 31st trade deadline, the team is getting him for 2 months, and now they're getting him for 1 month. So,
I think they're trying to trade him right now.
Yeah, well, that's true too. And if you know, if they pick up the salary, I think that would Seager has what, one more year left on the salary? You know,
D does not, so.
Yeah, so you'd just be renting D, essentially. That's – and, you know Jerry, he's a wheeler and dealer, and he's got to be itching to do something because it's been months, right, since he made a trade.
I mean, just like, you know, like D doesn't really fit on their team anyways. And so it's just like you have him there and you don't need him, and if you can move him, great. You know, I don't think he's a pain in the ass in the clubhouse or anything, but if he doesn't really fit, you don't really need him, you can move him and save a little bit of money, even if it's like $5 million. I mean, it's, you know, if, as an owner, when you're not pulling in any money this year, you might as well do it, you know, and it would make D happier as well if he goes through.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about it too, for 4 weeks, you're going to go from 30 players to 28 and then down to 26. But for 4 weeks, you're going to have at least a minimum of two more guys than you normally would carry. Somebody like D Gordon helps you in that regard. You know, the lack of, you know, the universal DH hurts D Gordon's market, but the expanded roster still helps him in that regard. Well, let's get to the rosters. Well, first of all, like, summer camp was over. It was interesting. The inner squad, I mean, like, you know, do you really know, like, the success? We were just talking about Kelnick. The success of, like, Kelnick or Kyle Lewis or Evan White recently, is that a function of them being better? Or is that a function of the Mariners pitching not being very good?
Yeah, you know, my very first story as a professional journalist, I started in Yakima, and they sent me out to cover an intra-squad game at Yakima Valley College, their football. And my lead was something about how inter-squad games are ambiguous, because if the offense does good, it means the defense might suck and vice versa. And I think it's the same way here. You can't read anything into, I don't know why I told that story, but yeah, you know, if those guys hitting doesn't necessarily mean that they're ready, it means that they could mean they're facing weak Mariner pitching and that may play out. But when you look at it with your eyes and you look at guys like Kyle Lewis and Evan White, you know, I think you'd agree that you see guys who are ready. And
yeah, they're talented. There's talent.
And talented and poised to do pretty good things. I'm most excited about those two guys as the season starts here. And also a couple of young pitchers, Sheffield and Dunn. You know, if those four guys kind of break out, then, you know, that's pretty good building blocks for the future.
All right, let's get to the roster. So they're going six-man rotation. We've talked a little bit about this, but it's Marco, Taiwan, Yusei, Kendall Graveman, Sheffield, and Dunn in that order. The six-man rotation, I think, is relatively smart. And in talking with DePoto the other day for that special section story, or I guess not special section, but our long preview story, he mentioned that they might consider doing a six-man rotation or a variation of it next year as well, just as a way, just – because what they're viewing it as is, you know, you're not getting the typical innings progression that you want for your pitchers to build up, you know, maximum 65 to 70 innings, maybe 80. So like they're looking at it as a year and a half deal. So like if they, you know, to avoid injury next year and going from only 75 innings of true games to a full season next year, they might have the extra pitcher to offset that. You know what I mean? Like, cause kind of the days of the 200 inning pitcher are kind of going by the wayside anyway. So they thought that they're going to view the innings progression as a year and a half and try and build it that way. And so there is a chance they would go six man next year, but any thoughts on what you've seen from the pitchers or heard about or read?
Well, I think, you know, they got lucky in the sense that they had these six penciled in going into this camp and everybody, you know, stayed healthy and it's going to be those six. And like I said, the two young guys look good. Kendall Graveman looks great. You know, I think the starting part of this team has a potential to be pretty good. The one guy who seems to still be a question mark is Kikuchi. And the, you know, and the health of Walker, he's just been so long since he pitched. So same with Graveman, that they're question marks. I mean, there's a lot of question marks. You got two young guys who haven't pitched a full season as well. But the bullpen, I think you'd agree, is where the main concern is. I mean, an 11 man bullpen. Did you ever think you'd live to see the day where a team had 11 relievers on their team? That used to be a full pitching staff. I guess it's only going to be for a little while, but
yeah.
I mean, who's the closer? I have no clue who the closer is right now. McGill, I guess, but
yeah.
You know, there's nobody that you think, wow, this is a guy I want with a one run lead in the ninth inning against the Astros.
It's weird if you think about it. Of all the you have six starting pitchers. You have two that haven't pitched in a game, in a major league game. I guess Taiwan started and pitched one inning. But, like, ostensibly haven't made a traditional MLB start in 2 years each. You have two rookies, one who's made four starts at the MLB level, and one who's made about five. And yet the biggest question mark you have is the guy that you're probably paying the most money per year to, that you went out and signed to a free agent contract. Like, I don't really know, like with Sheffield and Dunn, you kind of know that there are going to be times where they look really good and there are going to be times when they look really bad and looked overwhelmed, but that's what you expect because they're rookies and they still, you know, they're both 24 years old, which is not old by any standard. And then with Dunn and Graveman, you know, or with Graveman and Walker, you don't know because they haven't pitched, but like in camp, they've looked strong. I think the extra couple months off helped them make sure that they were healthy. And then, you know, you're not running the risk. You're only, you know, they're going to have 10 starts. So you're not running the risk of them having a setback or anything from the previous surgeries. But like Kikuchi, like you just don't know, because it wasn't health with him last year. It was just like in between his ears and his mechanics. And he, you know, not understand, like being afraid of hitters because of the power, and then changing his mechanics and his arm slot from inning to inning. And, you know, he swears that he's got one set of mechanics that he worked on with the Mariners and with Driveline, and he's going to stay with it. But I mean, you don't really know how he's going to react. What happens if he has a bad outing to start with? Does he change or not? He swears he's not going to, but he's so unpredictable. And I can't believe that, like, we're kind of looking at that, you know, because when you signed him, you thought, oh yeah, no, this guy's going to really help him, and he hasn't.
Yeah, they did make a big investment in him, and they do have an opt-out, right, after this year?
I think so. I'm just looking that up right
yeah.
now. I want to make sure that.
I believe you mentioned that in the press box the other day. But, you know, so if that's the case, he's kind of pitching for his future here. You know, we heard so many good things about Kikuchi during the offseason, during spring training, during the second offseason, how hard he was working and honing in on all these issues. And then it just seemed to kind of, you know, slip away a little bit in some of these intra-squad games when there was a little bit of adversity. So, yeah, you're right. The key will be him sort of staying true to what he's come to believe in and worked on and all that. You can't just throw that away at the first sign of stress. So, yeah, of all those guys, he's the one that probably – has the most to show. The young guys, the guys coming off injuries, there's a little margin of error. This is his second year as a big money guy. He's got to show something.
Oh, yeah. I don't – it's just I don't know if, like, he sometimes gets afraid of the power. I know that affected him a little bit. Just, like, the amount of power 1 through 9 in the lineup is pretty – difficult for players to adjust to, but I don't know. I mean, but again, it's not I'm sitting there saying, like, making it sound like he was terrible. I mean, he threw a complete game shutout in Toronto. He struck out 10 against the Yankees. You know, he had at least 7 or 8 really good starts. So it's not like I would just say, you know, he's terrible or anything like that, but I think it's just like the unpredictability, and it's just like he can be super good or super inefficient and bad, I think is what kind of really wears on people that watch him. I know it wears on Scott Service as well.
And, well, I mean, how many starts are starters going to get this year? Well, I guess if you take 60 games divided by a 6-man rotation, you get 10 starts.
Yep.
That doesn't give you much time to sort of find yourself. You know, that's a third of usually a starter in a 5-man rotation will get 30, or I think Kikuchi had 32 starts last year. You get 30 to 32 starts normally, and now it's down to 10. So that just shows the urgency for everybody. You know, I think it was Jason Stark pointed out that a 7-game losing streak for a team, which is fairly common, computes to a 19 game losing streak in a 162 game season. So, I mean, everything is amplified, slumps, hot streaks, everything. I mean, it's going to be hard to wrap your brain around, like, what kind of numbers the home run champion might have. 15 home runs, the RBI champion might have 40, something like that. You know, the team with the best record in baseball might have 38 wins.
I checked on the Kikuchi contract. So it's not till after the 2021 season.
Okay.
So following the end of the 2021 World Series, this is what I wrote. Following the end of the 2021 World Series, perhaps the Mariners will be playing in it, but probably not. The team has 3 days to decide if it wants to exercise its club option on Kikuchi. The club option isn't for 1 year, but for 4, 2022 through 2025, for a total of $66 million. If the Mariners choose not to exercise that club option, Kikuchi would be given a player option year of $13 million for 2022. And he could either exercise that option, spending 2022 with the Mariners, or opt out that final year and head to free agency.
This is not his make or break year.
No, next year is.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, do you think they would give him that extension, a 4-year club option? You know, I mean, $66 million, unless he's really, really good the next 2 years, I just don't know that you want to make that commitment.
And if he's not good and they decline the option, he'll probably take the player option. So that means that they would have him, you know, under struggling circumstances, they'd have him for 3 more seasons, this year plus 2 more. So it would behoove them to get him straightened out.
Yeah.
And he's got the stuff. Like you said, he had that shutout against Toronto. He pitched really well against the Yankees in a game. He had flashes. I mean, he could dial it up to 95, 96, which plays. That'll play. You know, if he can get his other stuff, his supplemental stuff going.
Let's talk about the bullpen. Larry got – well, I got a voicemail complaining about Larry. It's not like Larry's name isn't attached to the freaking his stuff.
Yeah.
The guy was like, you know, mad at Larry for picking the Mariners last in the division, which I believe I did too.
I didn't understand that voicemail. It was like he was shocked that I picked a team that lost 94 games last year last in the division.
Yeah. Or that you wrote, I don't know, did you have your column in today's paper?
No, it hasn't even run yet. That was the second. There was many aspects to this voicemail that puzzled me. One, why he called you to complain about me. Two, why he didn't make the same complaint to you since you also picked him last. Three, why he is stunned that the Mariners were being picked to finish last. And four, he complained about what I had written when the story I'd written hasn't even appeared yet. It's not even going to be until tomorrow's paper. So unless it was one of our editors who... Who's already read it?
That was really odd. So, but yeah, that's why I think they're only going to win 24 games or whatever is the bullpen.
Yeah,
the bullpen. They have 11 guys in their bullpen. Their best reliever is starting the season on the. I think their best reliever, their most talented reliever, Austin Adams, is starting the season on the injured list because he tried to push it too hard and. Summer camp. Well, you know, he had off-season knee surgery, and I think he tried to push it too hard. Their most experienced reliever, Yoshihisa Hirano, has COVID-19, and nobody knows when he's coming back, technically. I mean, he's back practicing. So he tested positive for COVID-19. He doesn't have it anymore. Tested positive. And now he's back working out. But, I mean, you know, he was down for a long time and said he couldn't do anything. He had temperature over 104 for like 3 or 4 days in a row. So he wasn't doing anything.
Actually, their most experienced reliever now is Brian Shaw. But he hasn't pitched. He hasn't been with him all spring. He'll join the team, I assume, tomorrow in Houston.
Yeah. I think he's here, and I think he got on the charter today. But yeah. So yeah, Brian Shaw, who's 32, I think, or 33, and he, you know, he'll have the most experience now. But he was also so bad that the Rockies decided they'd rather pay him $9 million not to play for them. And I think a $2 million option for next year $2 million buyout for next year. So $11 million not to play for them this season. In a season where relievers are vital in a 60-game season and they don't want him to play. That's pretty amazing to me. And if you look at his numbers – he's got a plus 5 ERA over the last 2 years. Now, part of that is pitching in Coors Field.
Yeah.
You know, he was very effective with the Indians as the eighth inning guy. And some people thought he should have been the closer for a while, but, you know, he's a reclamation project. So he's their best guy or their most experienced guy. I don't even know who the best guy is. Yeah. I mean, Burrell wrote about Dan Altavilla, and I knew I wasn't opening that Pandora's box because I've written about Dan Altavilla fixing things. I don't know how many years now, and it just hasn't happened. He has all the talent, and for whatever reason, that fastball gets a little flat and he gets a little sped up, and then, you know, he just struggles. You know, he'd been pitching great until everybody wrote about him, and then he struggled. So, you know, that's who they said their best reliever has been. If that's the case, they could be in some trouble.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a case of Service just playing the hot hand. I mean, you've got so many different arms out there, 11 of them, that, you know, he'll have a lot of guys to try, and you probably don't have, you know, a couple bad outings, you probably lose the confidence, and that might be it. And I mean, to me, a lot of these are just kind of names, you know, that Nestor Cortez and Anthony Mishewitz and Margavicious and those guys. I honestly couldn't give much of an assessment on a lot of these guys. They're going to have an opportunity to earn the trust of the manager and get some time. But, you know, as you've pointed out before, they have a little issue throwing strikes, which is not a good thing for a bullpen.
Yeah, I haven't gone through. I was going to post that. But here's the names of the – so we have Altavilla, which you mentioned. Brandon Brennan, who was good for a couple of months last year as a Rule 5 pickup. You know, he got the power sink or the power good changeup. You know, but he struggled at times too. Carl Edwards Jr., who was good about 3 years ago and had some arm issues and some command issues, was never a great command guy or a great strike thrower. He always threw hard. They picked him up. He's got some experience, but, you know, you don't know what you're getting with him. Zach Groats, who they got out of the independent leagues last year, throws a split finger. I mean, again, you know, guy that, you know, that kind of the dime a dozen reliever. Matt McGill, who they got off a waiver claim, I believe, from the Twins, I think he was DFA, and then they got him in a trade for a player to be named later. I can't remember. No, he's got a nice curveball. He actually pitched pretty well last year. And I mean, he would probably be your closer. Johan Ramirez, the Rule 5 kid, who up until this last outing, was just all over the place and struggled with command. Brian Shaw, who we just talked about. Taylor Williams, another guy they claimed off of waivers, local guy, throws pretty hard, but again, doesn't really know where it's going all the time. Nestor Cortez Jr., lefty long reliever. You know, they're going to use Cortez, Nick Margavicious, not Margavicious, Margavicious, and Anthony Misevich, as long relievers to kind of be able to piggyback off of, you know, possibly Dunn or Sheffield or any of those guys. I mean, like, there's a lot of question marks there. And a lot of guys that don't throw strikes, a couple converted starters. Services said they're not going to pitch these kids back to back right away because, you know, they're not built up for it. That leaves you in some spots.
Is there anybody in Tacoma on the taxi squad that you see as a strong candidate if one of these guys falter to come up?
To be honest, I thought Eric Swanson would make the team because he had pitched pretty well as a reliever last year. And I don't know, he'll make it. And, you know, he is a guy that can go multiple innings. I thought he was effective. Taylor Gilba, the lefty, is going to be on the traveling taxi squad. So I guess, you know, he's all right. He's got some talent. But beyond that, I mean, the rest of them are mostly – well, they have Art – so they're mostly kind of kids, inexperienced guys. You have Art Warren, who made his MLB debut last year, and you've got Aaron Fletcher, a kid they got from the Nationals, who's got some stuff. And then Della Plain and Joey Gerber are the other guys. I guess maybe LJ Newsom, they could use him as a reliever. But, again, those are all young kids. None of them – other only Art Warren, I think, has any – MLB experience, so, you know, they're going to – and they'll wait to make sure. I mean, though I don't know that service time is a big of a deal for relievers because it'll go up and down, but they'll wait to make sure they wait the six games or whatever if they ever consider bringing those guys in too. So,
yeah, I think in a normal season, a lot of those guys we would have seen at some point. I would have expected to see Della Plain and Gerber and maybe even Newsom, to mention Warren, at some point in a 162-game season, but – I don't know how many of them will come up. You know, maybe there'll be a lot of movement just because you can't afford to be patient with the struggling relievers. So maybe some of those guys will still get a chance.
Yeah, I think we're going to see, you know, we'll see those guys at some point or another, but, you know, maybe not as much as we you know, had it been a 162 game season, there's a chance that, you know, you bring Gerber or Delaplana, Warren up May or June, and all of a sudden, you know, they get 45, 50 appearances. I don't know that we're, you know, obviously not getting that now. So, but yeah, that's, you know, it was bad. The bullpen was the biggest question mark in regular spring training. It hasn't changed. I mean, these guys aren't magically going to be command guys or have great command or find it in that span. But in the same sense, most of these guys kind of have stuff. They have power stuff. If you remember a few years ago, we kind of joked that DePoto's bullpens always seemed to mirror him, you know, like command guys that didn't have big stuff. Now all these guys got big stuff and pump 95 in there. They just don't necessarily know where it's going all the time. But, you know, that's also the way of baseball as well. So that would be, you know, I didn't think there was any surprises in that, in the bullpen aspect. Now let's get to the position players now, because there are some surprises there. First of all, in a very Mariners thing to happen, because I think it happened with Zunino a few years ago. Remember, he had such a great spring, and in BP on the workout the day at Safeco Field, they were working out at Safeco Field the day before the season started. He pulled his oblique or strained his oblique, and they had to start. Remember, Michael Marjama caught Felix Hernandez on opening day that year because they didn't have enough guys. So Tom Murphy, they go and finally get an MRI on this foot, and it shows a fracture of his metatarsal, and he's out. So your starting catcher is out. You bring in Austin Nola as your starter, who has started four games at the MLB level as a catcher. He's caught about 200 at the minor league level, but he was a converted shortstop. And then Joe Hudson, who's caught started four games at the MLB level, caught in seven, but, you know, caught over 500 in the minor league. So not exactly ideal to have your starting catcher go down and put on the IL a day before the season starts.
No, not at all. And kind of had emerged as kind of a team leader, I think, Murphy.
Yeah.
And you feel bad for him. I don't know. Was he with the team when they went to Japan last year?
No, remember he was sitting at home watching the office reruns because he had just gotten – You know, the Mariners got him right before the actual opening day. They took
who was their opening day catcher? I don't even remember.
Oh man, it was Omar Narvaez. They took Narvaez and David. I can't remember, and Jose Lobatone to Japan, but Narvaez caught both games.
Right. So you feel bad for Murphy. I mean, he's a guy who's seems to have really found his niche here in Seattle. And there, you know, service said that he doesn't think it's that serious and that he won't be out for too long. So, but was it retroactive to when? I mean, does he have to stay out?
July 20th, I think. So, I mean.
So he'll miss 10 games or so at least.
Yeah.
It's a very inexperienced, raw catching core. So,
I mean, Nola's 30, and, you know, I think Hudson's 27, but they're, you know, they don't have MLB experience. You know, their defense for, you know, Nola was converted. I mean, he's a shortstop until 2016. They say he does all the right things. Well, I did notice that they were able to run on him a little bit, like some of the guys on the Mariners in the inner squad. Maybe that's the function of the pitchers not holding on runners properly, but that'll be something to watch. You know, Nola can hit a little bit. I think DePoto's probably out there looking for another catcher, you know, just to have, but that's not ideal. You go in with the idea of Murphy as your primary catcher, and you have him work with all these guys. Now you've got Joe Hudson trying to catch up and catch with these guys, or trying to catch up and get to know these guys, because he missed part of spring training with an oblique strain, and then he also had COVID intake testing issues as well. So not ideal there.
Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise me if Jerry picked up there's a million journeyman type catchers who are available this time of year. Mm-hmm. And I guess the question is, would you rather have Joe Hudson than somebody like that? And I'll be honest, I don't really know much about Joe Hudson.
Yeah, so they also, because of Murphy's injury, they added Joe Odom, who had been the Rangers catcher last year, to the player pool. You know, I was surprised when he didn't make the original player pool, but They added him. He's just a defense first guy, not much of a hitter, but just depth wise to be down at the alternative, or he's going to be traveling as the taxi squad catcher.
This is another case where you have a guy like Cal Raleigh, who's the future at the position, but as with Kelnick and Gilbert, you probably just don't want to go there and start the clock and all that.
No. I mean, you might see Cal though by the end of the year or whatever, but you know, they don't need to do it right now. And I mean, I don't know that he'd be ready to handle it as well. And I don't think anybody's ready to go in and face the Astros in their first MLB game. So that's kind of where they're at. The infield, I mean, it was all the same. The starting infield has been set since the off season. You have Evan White at first and Shed Long at second and JP Crawford at shortstop and Kyle Seager at third. Of that group, I didn't think Shed looked very good during summer camp. He didn't hit very well. I thought he looked kind of heavy. He wasn't moving well. Didn't play particularly well at second. I thought JP was only marginally better. They're professional athletes, and yeah, they should be able to handle stuff. But I think the absence of Perry Hill and how much those guys rely upon him on a daily basis was pretty glaring at times. Just because it's just his presence and the expectation, you know, the accountability he holds them to is maybe different than what other coaches do.
Yeah, no, I think there's no question about that. It shouldn't translate to their offense, but I guess maybe it all goes together. It's a big year for Long. I mean, this is a chance that he may not get again. You know, he's got to seize that. This is his moment. And, I thought he looked good in the original spring training, but maybe not as good this time. You know, White's looked tremendous on both sides, offense and defense. I mean, he's the best glove man they've had at first in a long, long time. And he really looks like he's got a clue at the plate. I've seen him.
Hard.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen him and Lewis in Rookie of the Year polls. You know, everyone's picking the White Sox guy that we talked about, Luis Robert. But those guys are getting some mention. And, you know, Crawford, to me, he's looking more self-assured and sort of confident than he did last year. And another guy to watch. And then at DH, you know, Vogelbach, you wrote about how he struggled this spring, and then he read it and got three hits. Was that yesterday?
Yeah, I got three hits yesterday. Well, I wrote it, but the manager pointed it out, and so did the GM pointed it out when I was talking with him. So yeah, they were less than impressed with what they'd seen from Vogelbach this summer camp. And, you know, I don't know. I didn't get the complete accusation from them that he didn't do as much as some of the other guys did, you know, during the shutdown. But yeah. Sometimes it was kind of intimated that maybe it was, but who knows? But he just hadn't hit well all summer camp. He looked pretty bad until yesterday.
This is a guy who hit, what, like 170 the second half of last season too? Yeah. So, since he made the All-Star team, he's been not just a mediocre player, he's been a bad player. So, you know, it's not like he's got to show something. He had a good half season last year, and that's about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, making the All-Star team doesn't lock him in. He can go the route of Brian LaHare, you know, make the All-Star team and be in Japan in a year, be out of the league. So, you kind of hear some stuff, and so I wrote my roster projection a couple of days ago, and I put Fraley in there, but I kind of knew that he wasn't going to be, and I wrote that there's a good chance that Jake Fraley isn't going to make the team, and they only have two outfielders on the roster, which they did. They have two outfielders, Malik Smith and Kyle Lewis. Fraley is down in the alternate training site, as is Braden Bishop. Both guys that just didn't play well during summer camp. Braden started to pick it up late, but Jake, his timing looked funny. He got hit in the head with a fastball. Then he had, I guess, a stomach bug. He wasn't feeling good. Just like, you know, he just wasn't very good. And in talking with some people within the organization, they just felt like, given how much his timing is off at the plate and how much his confidence is kind of down, that, you know, putting him out there every day against the Astros, against Verlander, McCullers, Greinke, and Josh James just doesn't seem like something that's going to benefit the kid at this point, that he needs to go down to Tacoma and try and find some rhythm to his swing, because he's just all out of sorts.
Yeah, that might be a blessing for him to do that, but that's a tough break. This is a guy that, I mean, he was going to start on opening day, and if it had been March 30th or whenever they were going to open, and now he kind of played himself out of it. And, to me, that's the biggest surprise of this camp, is that he didn't make the team. I had pretty much written him in pen for the starting, one of the starting outfield jobs, particularly when it became clear that Haniger wasn't going to be there. And then, you know, Malik Smith's been there for what, 1 week or so he's, you know, he hasn't had much training. It's a really, really shallow depth wise outfield, two outfielders. And then you're going to have a roaming crop of converted infielders, basically Dylan Moore, Marmolejos, and Tim Lopes. And I guess
D Gordon,
all of whom are infielders by trade, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marmolejos is mainly an infielder. So, you know, that Braden Bishop, you know, I thought maybe just purely by his glove would make the team. But I think he just didn't show enough offensively. And Marmolejos and Lopes had really good camps, and Moore kind of earned it last year. So,
yeah, I mean, Marmolejos and Lopes, I mean, they were earning it in the first spring training, and Braden wasn't either. Like, Braden, honestly, and it sucks, but he hasn't looked the same since he took that fastball off the side and had the injury. You know, I thought he played well last spring. I thought he was playing well up until the point where he got injured, but he just doesn't look the same. He doesn't look as physically strong, and I think it affects him, you know, the struggles since he's been coming back from that injury. You know, I know Matt Calkins wrote a column about it, but just kind of about how he talked about how he was going to the plate, not even with any confidence, like just going up there knowing that he wasn't feeling right, that nothing was good was going to happen. I mean, it's tough to play like that. I thought he started to hit the ball a little bit in the last few games, and Service even mentioned it, but you know, he's a guy that could be up again. Like if there's a whole bunch of mistakes in the outfield, or if they're able to move D or something like that, yeah, I think he gets another chance. But, you know, it's funny how windows work for players to get big league opportunity. And last year was his window. And because of a fluke injury, you know, it cost him playing in probably 75, 80 games at the MLB level.
And yeah, he's had a couple of tough breaks. I think he had an injury the previous year in the minor leagues that sidetracked him when it looked like he was going to, you know, really get a good shot at it. So, yeah, it's, you know, we all know what a great guy Braden is and what good things he's doing and the community and all that. So you root for a guy like that. But, you know, it's tough to come back from those injuries. And you know, and when Haniger went out, that severely curtailed their outfield depth as well and their plans. That was
like if you're Braden and you're looking around and Kyle is doing what he's doing. Obviously, Malik isn't going to be around much longer. I mean, but, you know, Lewis is doing this. Plus, you have Julio and Kelnick, you know, coming up behind you quickly, if not passing you already. I mean, like, that window is getting smaller and smaller. And now a lot of people have always projected him to be a fourth outfielder. Maybe he sticks with the Mariners that way, or maybe he has to go somewhere else. But, I mean, again, like I said, that window last year where they were calling up everybody and anybody, and they were trying infielders in the outfield because they simply didn't have enough. That was his time, and because of a fluke injury, he wasn't allowed to capitalize on it.
Who was the guy they got from the Giants that they played out there for about?
Mac Williamson,
yeah.
He hit a homer in like his first at bat or whatever, and then didn't get another hit after. Or Keon Broxton.
Yeah, I mean, that's time. Those are at bats and games that would have gone to Braden Bishop right there. Yeah. You know, those guys really didn't belong in the major leagues. And so, yeah, it's – he's still young, but not as young. What is he, 27 now?
I think 26 maybe.
26, yeah. 27, yeah. So, I mean, there's certainly plenty of time to reestablish himself. But you're right. It's just amazing how you have that opportunity and it may not come again. That's what I was mentioning about Shed Long. You know, this is his chance, and who knows if he doesn't seize it, will they stick with him as their second baseman of the future or try something else?
You know, for as much as, like, the Mariners preach on defense, preach about defense, and they did, you know, like DePoto about being athletic and being better on defense. And then last year we had to watch Tim Beckham and Domingo Santana and Omar Narvaez and Ryan Healy play third. But, you know, like playing Lopes and D and those guys in left field, that's not good. I mean, like, honestly, anymore though in baseball, like I know that they do it in like youth baseball, they put the worst player in right field, but you, to really hide somebody defensively, a lot of times it's easier to put them in left field because a lot of the porches are short and you just kind of play back at the wall and charge everything, especially like in Houston where they'll probably play Marmolejos on opening day. Marmolejos has played outfield in the minor leagues. I mean, he's not very fast, but in Houston with the Crawford boxes, just play at the Crawford boxes, then run in on everything else and hope Malik gets it. I know Malik isn't great in center either. So,
Kyle Lewis in the center, to be honest.
Yeah, I think they just don't want to do that too much because they think that it'll wear on him physically. But, you know, it's kind of weird, but if you think about it, Kelnick's really not a true center fielder either. I mean, he plays there and stuff, but he doesn't rate out as elite defensively. You know, they always kind of projected him as a corner guy, but maybe, you know, he can play center, but as big as he's getting, holy cow, I don't know that he's, you know, going to look like a linebacker, not a center fielder.
And Julio's probably a corner guy too.
Oh yeah, for certain. Yeah. For certain. So with what we just said, after the voicemail that says you're not very positive and all the other stuff, my cohort, do you want to amend your prediction, which I can't remember, was it 25 wins or what?
24, I think. I'm afraid that if I was going to amend it, I think I might downgrade the number of wins.
Yeah.
But no, I'm going to stick at 24. That seems like a solid number. I think you had less. You had fewer. You had 23, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I'd have to go back. I don't remember. I've kind of said anywhere between 23 and 25. But you're right. Not having Murphy for the first 10 days and Adams for the first 10, you know, like a lot of times those were predicated on those two guys being available and being healthy, you know, and then watching that bullpen. Oh, I just don't know. 23 yeah. might be a gift. And it just, I haven't looked at their schedule, but you know, you got four versus the Astros, you know, three against the Angels and come back with four more against the A's. And that's a tough start. I mean, and they don't get any breaks other than the Giants. There are no other breaks on their schedule.
No, and they're only playing nine other teams this year. That's another thing. They're only playing the Western Division teams and the NL West. I mean, the Dodgers, how many times do they play the Dodgers? The Dodgers are just absolutely loaded.
I think so six is all not terrible. Yeah. But and,
you know, the Padres are getting better. You know, the Diamondbacks are decent. And, you know, the Rockies
are very good. But, yeah.
You know, they made the postseason 2 years ago, kind of faltered last year. And then the Giants are kind of a team in transition. They're probably the weakest team they'll play this year.
So they have three against the four against the A's. So they go four Astros, three at the Angels, four against the A's at home. And then four against the Angels at home, and then the Rockies come in, which might be their one. But they have this stretch in August after their off day, three at the Astros, and then four straight against the Dodgers, two on the road and two at home. So they get the Dodgers four times. But
that's a lot in a 60-game season. I got a question for you. Opening day, they're the first team to have the crack at the hated –
Oh, I was gonna get to this. I think Margo's gonna hit somebody. I think so. He's got the red ass a little bit at this stuff, and he really was bothered by that.
Yeah,
last year.
And I think, to a certain extent, I think pitchers feel like they're sort of doing it for everybody. You know, mm-hmm. They're standing up for every team that got screwed by the Astros, mm-hmm. Like the Dodgers. In particular.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, you don't want to put guys on base, I guess, but.
You wait till the right time. There's always two outs, somebody's up, you know, put one off Altuve's guy, put one in his ribs.
Altuve and Bregman seem to be the two targets.
I mean, like, Bregman has got a lot of the Ian Kinsler qualities. Like, teams, if you're going to hit somebody on the Astros, teams would prefer to hit him. You know, but it's also the machinations after the home runs, you know, the staring into the cameras and flinging the bats and stuff like that. Like, hey, you know, especially now, like in retrospect, like he does all those things after knowing what the pitch is, you know, and you're like, okay, we don't like that. And they can't technically fight. You know, they're not supposed to fight. They're not supposed to.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. There's like strict, severe penalties, supposedly, if you fight. And also if you argue, even if arguing with an umpire, you know, you're not supposed to get close enough to do that. So that will be interesting. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how good the Astros are. I mean, all those guys like, you know, Altuve won an MVP and a couple batting titles, and Springer and Correa, you know, and Bregman, are they going to be as good without knowing what the pitch is? I mean, I think they're all talents, but certainly that helped to boost their stats and their production.
Do you think, do you think that those guys like Bregman and Altuve and all these guys go out of their way to that they press a little bit trying to show that, hey, we didn't need that we were still good, that, you know, you could get negative results because they're trying so hard to prove that we didn't need that?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. And it's also a possibility that they did need that, or that it certainly helped them a lot. Not that they needed it, but that, you know, that it artificially inflated their, as I said, their stats and their production.
Huh. Okay, so you obviously are finishing last. What is your order? What did you go with? I would assume you went Astros, A's.
Yeah, I think I went Astros, A's, Angels, Rangers, Mariners. I can't remember. I might have had the Angels and the Rangers switch, but I'm pretty sure I had the Angels third.
Yeah, I think I did the same thing too.
Okay. Yeah. Who did you have winning at all? I had the Cleveland Indians. I think I picked them last year as well. I like their pitching. You know, one of these years they're going to do it.
You picked who?
The Cleveland Indians.
Well, they're not going to be named that for much longer anyways. But, yeah. Wow. That's. I love Lindor, but that's I went the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Oh, bold. Really went on a limb there. Although they haven't won it since 88. So.
They're due. I wanted to put Dodgers and Twins, but I think I went Dodgers and Yankees. The Yankees, they got 3.5 months off. All of a sudden, James Paxton, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton are all healthy and they can all play. I mean,
I know.
Holy cow.
And LeMahieu, who was out with COVID early, I think he's back. I don't think he's going to start tonight, but they're loaded. I was looking at their lineup today. I mean, the two best teams in the best team in each league is the Yankees and the Dodgers, but I don't think I picked either of them just because, you know, this is such a fluky year. I think something fluky is going to happen.
Yeah, like, you know, they have Judge and Stanton. I think their best player is Gleyber Torres.
Yeah.
I think he's their best player. He's so good.
Like Sanchez, who, you know, in a regular season get hit 40 bombs. And then you got a pitching staff with Cole and Paxton and
Tanaka
and
Ja Happ.
Yeah.
I mean, they lost Chapman, but they, you know, you lose Chapman, but we have Zach Britton, so that'll be okay.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
yeah. And they'll go get somebody if they have to.
So I, you know, we sat there and talked about how free agents were going to take a beating, but we always, and you and I talked about it, that we were wondering what would happen with Mookie Betts, which just goes to show you that Mookie Betts and the Los Angeles Dodgers are the exception to everything. You know what I mean? Like, one, the Dodgers were smart and they dumped a bunch of payroll in the last couple of years in an effort, knowing, I think, that they were going to try and get Betts or trying to get Gerrit Cole last year. And Mookie being a transcendent talent, the world of COVID-19 did not affect his market. I mean, he got paid.
Yeah, I was surprised that just in this financial climate that a team would commit 12 years and what was the number, 386 or something like that?
Yeah, 368.
It just surprised me. I thought he might have miscalculated and not find a deal like that. But what's interesting was, you know, when those negotiations were falling apart and it looked like the season might not even happen this year, mm-hmm. you know, there were people talking about, man, the Dodgers traded all this young talent for Mookie Betts and they may not get a game out of him because, you know, he'd be, there'd be no season. He'd be a free agent. He may go to the Yankees or somebody. And now it turns out that they'll have him for 13 years because it's a 12-year extension beyond this year, I think. So, I mean, he's going to be 39 or so years old when this thing ends. And, I mean, this could be – by that time, it could be one of those Albert Pujol contracts where, you know, the last 4 or 5, 6 years they're saying, oh, my God, what did we do? But if there's a team that could afford that, it's the Dodgers. I mean, they are absolutely rolling in the dough. They draw $3.5 million every single year. And,
yeah, and they finally got their TV package on DirecTV too, so that helps a little bit.
But then, but with the billions of dollars lost in revenue this year, you know, I still wonder what the free agent, you know, not everybody's a Mookie Betts. What's the run of the mill free agent going to find for themselves? Is that money still going to be there for them? The guys who are a good major league player, but not a superstar.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, so, you know, Betts is 28. That's what makes him exceptional too. So now you've got like, so then the next, I think the next two best free agents are JT Realmuto and Marcus Semien. Now the Realmuto and the Phillies have talked extension, but he's 30, you know, and he's a great catcher, but you know, catchers break down faster in terms of that. And then Semien, who has really turned himself with the help of Ron Washington, turned himself into something. But, you know, they're 30. I mean, you're not getting a 7-year deal if you're 30 years old because you're already past technically what they feel to be your peak age. Now, in the pre-COVID era, I still think that Semien probably gets $100 million and Realmuto gets $100 million. But post-COVID or in COVID, do you think they're going to get $100 million as a team? Yeah. You know, like I said, we said, the Dodgers have the money to do it, but they don't. You know, but not everybody else. I mean, the Cubs, I mean, the Yankees have got a ton of luxury tax issues, as do the Red Sox, which is why they didn't keep Mookie. I mean, like, what are these guys going to get?
You know, yeah, well, you and I were talking the other day that a lot of these guys may take the so-called pillow contract where you go to a team for a year to, you know, hopefully, I mean, guys used to do it, maybe coming off years so they could reestablish their own value. But this year they may do it so that teams could get more money by 2022. You know, maybe the financial structure finds some more normalcy after a full season and removed from COVID and all that. So, you know, maybe there's a case where maybe teams will or players will try to do that, just push their free agency back a year and figure they'll have a better run at it in 2022.
Go ahead.
Oh, you're getting a year older, though. I mean,
yeah.
You know, Semien, teams just don't want to pay guys in their 30s, and a guy like Marcus Semien will now be 31, and maybe even less likely to give him money. So it's going to be a tough go for these guys.
What about George Springer? He's 30. George Springer's 31, and he's you know, he's gotten beat up a little bit. You know, he's not going to – maybe he signs, like, just a one-year extension to stay with the Astros and tries to go again. Because, like, what if you're – you know, what if you're a free agent and you have, like, a down year? You get dinged up, you miss a couple weeks, and then you don't play very well. I mean, you're only dealing with 60 games. You don't have the ability to come back and kind of show that you have all of this. I mean, it's – you know, Paxton, 32, James Paxton, first free agent contract, he's going to be 32. He's 32 this season, you know?
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy. Justin Turner, age 36. What about Nelly Cruz? He's 40. You know, he's still showing no signs of slowing down, but, like, I'm sure somebody would take a one-year flyer on Nelly Cruz just because he's such a good dude and he works so hard.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's going to be a dose of reality for a lot of these guys. And you also have the base, you know, the basic agreement is up after the year too.
Yeah.
So who knows what the system is even going to be in place by after next season. So,
yeah, I mean, cause like, yeah, again, like you might sign the 1 year pillow contract, but then after the 2021 season, you could be staring at a possible work stoppage as well. So,
yeah, exactly. All right. I'm going to call, buzzer on this.
No, it's fine. just promote what you wrote about and then we can get out of here.
All right. Well, when are you posting this on?
We're going to post it on Friday.
Friday. So in today's paper, Friday, as I say this on Thursday, for our second part of our baseball preview, I wrote just about a look at what kind of a wacky year it's going to be for baseball. So that's what I wrote. And I also wrote a story on the Seattle Kraken and my opinion on that name.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Larry. So we will, I think he's locking up anyway. So we're going to end this. Thanks to Larry for coming on.
Not a huge fan of.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So it comes back. You locked it up. You're not a huge fan of the Kraken name. Is it better than the Rocket City Trash Pandas?
Yes.
The Missoula Paddleheads.
Well, we both have a fond spot for that one.
Hartford Yard Goats.
Yard Goats. I love the Yard Goats. The Lansing Lugnuts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that one fit because of the factory there, right?
The Iron Pigs. I'm not even sure what city they are.
Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. Yeah. Chattanooga yeah. Lookouts is one of the coolest names I always thought was cool.
Yeah, that's a long-standing one because there's Lookout Mountain. Yeah. But yeah, that's what it struck me as, was sort of like something, an outrageous name to get attention and marketing.
Right, well.
I'm not like outraged by it. I just don't like it.
That's good. All right. Well, I'll let you roll. I'm going to go get watching baseball. I think Fauci just threw out the first pitch and we missed it. Somebody said his fastball needed a little work, but if he does the other stuff right, I don't care. So thanks for coming on. And
all right. Thank you.
What are you going to do for opening day tomorrow? Are you just going to watch from home, you and Jordan?
I think so. Yeah. I'm just going to sit in the living room with a computer in my lap and because we both got to write afterwards.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I invited Bob Condotta to come down and watch the game just because it's Bob, and we're gonna get some Salamone's pizza and watch the game. Nice. And all right, so
that's nice.
Yeah, all right,
this will be the first Mariners home opener. Well, I guess we'll be there. Never mind.
Yeah, we'll be there for that one. So
yeah.
All right, dude. I will talk to you later. Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you. See ya.
That'll do it for this week's Extra Innings podcast. Enjoy baseball tonight. It's not going to be the same as before, but it's still better than no baseball. So I hope you enjoyed listening, and we will talk to you soon.
This has been the Extra Innings podcast presented by the Seattle Times with your host, Ryan Divish. Thanks to the Midnight Salvage Company for providing the beds and bumper music for the podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher. You can reach Ryan via email, rdivish@seattletimes.com. Follow Ryan on Twitter, @RyanDivish, or on Facebook, facebook.com/RyanDivish. Thanks for listening.